Thanks for the introduction. Hi, everyone. My name is Octavian Suciu, and I'm going to talk about our paper entitled Vulnerability Disclosure in the Age of Social Media, Exploiting Twitter for Predicting Real-World Exploits. My co-authors are Karl Sobotki and Tudor Dumitrash from University of Maryland. Many high-profile vulnerabilities like Shellshock or Heartbleed were disclosed last year. However, this is part of a more general trend where we see that the number of vulnerabilities disclosed in general is increasing. So for example, last year, the CVID, which is the standard vulnerability identifier, had to be modified because its 10,000 vulnerabilities per year capacity was not enough. Moreover, we see situations where vendors choose to align their vulnerability disclosures. And we, for example, on October 14 last year, several high-profile vendors like Microsoft, Oracle, or Adobe chose to disclose 254 vulnerabilities on the same day. This is a problem for system administrators who must address all those vulnerabilities. However, recent empirical studies suggested that no more than 15% of the entire vulnerabilities are actually exploited in the wild. That is why we must know which of these vulnerabilities we have to address first. So the research question we're trying to answer in this paper is, can we use Twitter analytics in order to early detect the exploits that are likely that are found in the wild? Why would we look at Twitter in the first place? So for, besides the fact that there is a community of security analysts or hackers or so on discussing vulnerabilities and exploits on Twitter, we find situations where tweets appear before the vulnerability disclosure. Here we see a tweet that appeared about a open source project that appeared 2 days ahead of the mentioned vulnerability was disclosed. So we would say that this vulnerability, this is not very dangerous since the discussion is about the patch itself. However, a potentially more dangerous situation is represented by the leaks from the coordinated disclosure process. This tweet right here, which appeared 5 days ahead of the disclosure, advertises an Adobe Flash vulnerability. And we say it's more dangerous because miscreants could try to contact the user in an attempt to purchase the exploit for the not yet patched vulnerability. When looking at a problem like exploit prediction, we face a couple of challenges. So an example of prior work on exploit prediction focused on proof of concept exploits. They used an SVM classifier, but our aim here is to predict exploits that are active in the wild. There's a difference, that is, we found evidence for only 1.3% of the vulnerabilities disclosed last year as being exploited in the wild. In contrast, in the proof of concept exploits work, more than 50% of the entire data set was marked as exploited. People did research before on Twitter analytics, but they mostly focused on trending topics like movies or flu outbreaks. And those things gather lots of attention and they gather millions of tweets. However, in 2014, only around 10% of the vulnerabilities gather more than 50 tweets. An additional challenge when looking at exploits in the wild comes from the ground truth coverage. So, for example, Symantec does not have a product for Linux. And that is why an exploit for the Linux kernel, it's unlikely to appear in our ground truth. A very important challenge when using Twitter analytics is adversarial interference. So since Twitter is free and open and anybody could register and start posting, it's reasonable to think that an adversary could start could try to poison our exploit detector. The contributions of our work are we propose the design of and the implementation of a technique for early exploit detection using social media. We report a performance evaluation of our system for exploits found in the wild, and we also analyze the robustness of our system in the presence of adversarial interference. Additionally, we report a performance evaluation for proof of concept exploits, and we categorize the information leaks from Twitter feed which appeared before the vulnerability disclosure. In this talk, I'm going to focus on the first three bullets, the other two being addressed in the paper. The data set we're considering comes from Twitter. So Twitter retrieves all the posts that match certain keywords. And we started collecting tweets in February 2014, searching for around 50 keywords. Since then, we've collected 1.1 billion tweets. However, in this talk, we only look at tweets retrieved by the CVE keyword, which correspond to vulnerabilities, CVE identifiers. I want to note that Twitter starts sampling the tweets retrieved that match a keyword at the point where all the matching volumes exceed 1% of the entire host. And we found no evidence of the CVE keyword tweets exceeding this 1%, so that is why we believe that our data set represents an unsampled corpus. We've collected 287,000 tweets, which match around 5,800 vulnerabilities. So the design of our system. We collect features from several sources. First of all, the vulnerability databases like the National Vulnerability Database or OSVDB. We take features like the CVSS score or its base subcomponents, examples being availability impact or authentication. We also extract general database features from these sources, including features that prove to be useful in prior work. Some example being the category in OSVDB or the number of references in NVD. Of course, you also derive features from Twitter, and here we have two categories. First of all, word features. We arrived at a static set of keywords after a feature selection step, some example being exploits or web. And another category is represented by general vulnerability statistics features, like the number of tweets about the vulnerability, the number of retweets, number of users, and so on. For the ground truth, we consider three different sources. First of all, when we talk about exploits in the wild, we gather data from Symantec's security response, and this was reported as the most reliable source of exploits likely to appear in exploit kits. For public and private proof of concept exploits, we look at ExploitDB and the Microsoft Security Advisories. We train a linear support vector machine using a subset of the Twitter data, and then we report the classification results using the remaining subset of tweets. Now I'm going to talk about exploits in the wild. First of all, the performance metrics we're considering, the precision in our case represents the fraction of vulnerabilities marked as exploited by our classifier and that are actually exploited in the wild. This means that false positives are vulnerabilities that are marked as exploited but are not exploited in the wild. And false positives hurt the precision of the classifier. Additionally, recall represents the fraction of exploited vulnerabilities that are marked as exploited by the classifier. As a baseline classifier, we use the CVSS score as an indicator of an exploit. So the CVSS score is a value between 0 and 10, and we mark every vulnerability having a score about a threshold as being exploited. And as seen from this plot, for different CVSS thresholds, the recall of such a classifier is good, but the precision is very low and does not exceed 9%. Additionally, if we look at the exploitability subscore, which measures the likelihood of an exploit, we see that the precision is still low. This is because CVSS score is conservative and marks as many vulnerabilities as possible as exploitable, resulting in false positives. Now, turning back to our classifier, we do a feature selection step and we measure the utility of our features using the mutual information. So mutual information between a feature and a class label measures how much the uncertainty about the class label is reduced when knowing the specific feature value. And this plot here shows the mutual information of different features across both proof of concept and exploits in the wild. Now a breakdown of our different features categories and the reported performance of the classifier. So if we consider the CVSS score alone, we see that the same trend as for the baseline classifier, the recall is good, but the precision is very, very poor. Additionally, database information features provide a slightly higher precision, but it's still low. Word features extracted from Twitter, on the other hand, provide a very low recall, but the precision is high. Additionally, Twitter traffic features provide a higher recall than the word features, but at a cost of the precision. Putting all those features together, we see that the overall performance is improved, but there is a trade-off between the precision and recall as a function of the regularization parameter of the classifier. So can we improve the classification performance even more? It turns out that if we filter the vulnerabilities based on the ground truth coverage, the overall performance is improved. So here in this plot, we only consider vulnerabilities that come from Microsoft and Adobe, which are predominant in our semantic data set. Additionally, if we do a thresholding and only consider vulnerabilities which gathered more than 50 tweets, we see that the performance is improved even further. However, this is not practical as we cannot subset the vulnerabilities based on the Twitter volume. Now I'm going to do about opportunities for early prediction of exploits. So for doing early prediction of exploits, we need to know the date when those exploits are actually found in the wild. And we find this date from the semantic signatures and then we train 10 separate linear SVMs, each on a separate subset of the Twitter data, and then start streaming tweets one by one to all the classifiers and monitor a prediction threshold to decide when the vulnerability is exploited. And this prediction threshold measures the number of times all those 10 classifiers have to agree in order to mark the vulnerability as exploited. So why is this early prediction possible? Here in this plot, the reference point is representing the time at which the attacks are reported in the wild by the semantic signatures. The CDF here shows the time difference between the first tweet and the signature creation date. And it turns out that in approximately 80% of the cases, the first tweet appears ahead of the semantic signature. So we have an opportunity for early detection. I'm going to exemplify this early prediction on Heartbleed. So the first tweet about Heartbleed appeared a couple of minutes after its disclosure, and this is 2 days ahead of the ground truth. And here's how our classifier's prediction probability of, evolves as more and more tweets are streamed. And if we choose a prediction threshold of 95%, we are able to detect Heartbleed as exploited just 3 hours after its first tweet. That is more or less 2 days ahead of the semantic ground truth. So, of course, there is a trade-off between precision and the detection lead time. The earlier we decide to mark a vulnerability as exploited, the lower the precision will be. And in our experiments, we choose the 95% threshold, which gives us a median detection lead time of 2 days and 45 classification precision. Here in this updated plot, we see the CDF for the prediction, which lags behind the first tweet, but in most cases is still before the semantic signatures. Now I'm going to talk about the adversarial interference. So the literature distinguishes between two types of machine learning adversarial interference. First of all, an attacker who is poisoning the testing data set is called exploratory. On the other hand, an attack that tries to poison both the training and the testing data set is called causative. When modeling our adversary, we have to answer some questions. First one being, can we prevent the adversary from poisoning the training set? And the answer to this question is no, because Twitter is free and open, and everybody could post and poison our training data set. It is reasonable to consider a causative attack. Second, can we keep our feature set secret? Well, because we already provided the measure used to derive the utility, even though we try to keep our feature set secret, an adversary could do the same calculations and come up with the final set of features that prove to be useful in our case as well. So we must have no assumption about the secrecy of our features. Finally, is the adversary resource bound? And the answer is yes, because one single Twitter account could be easily blacklisted, so an adversary must purchase multiple accounts, and that is why in our simulations we must consider scenarios where multiple accounts are involved. Okay, in summary, our adversary model tries to induce false positive. That is making vulnerabilities unlikely that are not exploited appear like those that are actually exploited. So we do a simulation of a causative attacks, and our assumption here is that adversaries cannot prevent benign users from posting. The first adversary we modeled, it's called blabbering adversary, just randomly posts tweets having no knowledge about any features we're using. And as we can see from this plot, this adversary does minimal damage to the classifier by only adding noise. The second type of attacker, called word copycat, tries to mirror the statistic, the word statistic for exploited vulnerabilities. What that means is that it takes unexploited vulnerabilities and posts things like hack or exploit or so on. And as we can see, the damage such an adversary does is bound because we have other feature types as well. The third and more the most powerful attacker we're considered, called full copycat, is a Sybil-like attacker that has sufficient time and resources in order to purchase account with friend and follower accounts, and is able to manipulate almost all features except account creation date and account verification. So this attacker is, in this case, our classifier's performance is degraded and its damage is bound only by the non-Twitter features. And in this case, a solution to a defense for such an attack would be to keep a list of trusted users. And in fact, in our research, we found a list of approximately 4,000 users that proved to be the most useful for classification purposes. I'm going to wrap things up now. So we proposed the design of a Twitter-based exploit detector, which could be used in patch prioritization or vulnerability risk assessment. We also showed a possibility for early detection of exploits active in the wild, and we found out that the performance of such a system is highly dependent on the quality of the ground truth. That is why we urge the community to share their data sets in order to make such systems perform better. Lastly, we tested our exploit detector under adversarial interference, and this is an example of a system, a security system without secrets, where the integrity is not only due to the secrecy of the features used. I want to mention that we are able to provide the code used for reproducing all the features, all the figures in our paper, and we added more details about our features at the following link. Thank you, and I'm ready to take questions.
Hi, Hi. Garrett Wasserman, CERT Coordination Center. It's interesting to me, so I kind of enjoyed listening about this. A couple of questions. First is, was there a specific reason that you chose Twitter over perhaps some other social media?
No, we just did some empirical studies and found some evidence, like the tweets posted before the vulnerability disclosure, and that is how we decided, okay, this looks like an interesting direction.
Okay. I think you had a slide somewhere that said that you were modeling based on the CVSS score.
Yes.
And was that used to create the model, or was your model predicting the CVSS score of something?
So the CVSS score is the only indicator of exploitability. Let me go back to that slide. Wow. Sorry. Wow. All right. So we have different CVSS score thresholds, and for each of these thresholds, we dictate that every vulnerability having a score above this threshold is exploited. Everything below is not exploited, and that's how we report the performance in this plot.
That's used to create the model, though, right? That your model can't predict the CVSS score ahead of time, right?
No, so, definitely not. We didn't mention that. No.
Okay, so does it just tell you how likely it is to be exploited then, but it doesn't really give a whole lot of information about how severe it might be, right? It could be a low.
Well, yeah, this is meant to show how CVSS score is unable to show precisely which of the vulnerabilities are exploited in the wild.
Okay.
Did that answer your question?
Okay. I'll have to think about it a little bit.
we didn't look at severity, but that's an interesting thing that we could do in the future. We try to predict the likelihood of exploitation.
Okay. Yeah. And then kind of last thing, I hope I'm not holding up a line too much. did you use just the CVEs, or I think it was just CVEs?
Yeah, only the CVE identifiers. Yeah.
There's a lot of vulnerabilities that don't get CVEs because of the different roles.
That's an interesting direction we're working on, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I was just curious if you thought about it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi. I found it interesting that you were using just a straight-up classifier to classify them as likely to be exploited or not likely to be exploited when your motivating example is that you have this large, you know, vulnerability disclosure that happens at once and you need to prioritize. It seems like you have the information in your data already to turn that into a prioritized list where you start, you know, you start with the ones that are your classifier is most confident about and you actually have that information. Have you looked at trying to analyze your data in that way?
Well, we just chose to have a machine learning approach. I think like choosing a different approach, like a manual analysis of the informative.
No. You were using an SVM, right? So you have the SVM. You have the SVM probabilities, the classifier probabilities. You can just straight up use those because you have. You can change the operating point of the classifier. Yeah. So instead of just saying these ones are likely to be exploitable and these ones aren't likely to be exploitable, and I have 45% precision, you can say like, okay, here's the ordered list of these are the ones that are most likely to be exploitable and just go down it and try and fix them.
Okay.
And I'd be interested to see how if you analyze your data in that way, how useful it could be.
In this regard. It's very interesting. Yeah. Thank you.
Hi, I'm wondering, did you look into like possible false positives? For instance, if somebody is like essentially requesting an exploit for a specific vulnerability on Twitter, it's like, I'm looking forward to an exploit for Heartbleed, or I'm waiting to get this finally exploited, and stuff like this.
We did not consider that.
Okay, thank you.
No, thank you.